Welcome again to IndyCan Radio. This is your host, Joe Chisholm. In the house, Joey Keithley, frontman of DOA, who have been punking it up around the world for almost 30 years. He's our professor on this education of the punk world scene. We're going to have some great Canadian punk from yesterday and today. It's going to be a great ride. I'm glad you're with me. But first, let's go way back to 1978, the first words out of DOA's mouth.
Disco Song! Oh!
So we just opened up with Disco Sucks, going all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, there was no way when you recorded that you thought, you know, if you ever lived to the year 2007, you'd be touring in Canada, right?
Well, I never conceived that we would be playing that song like 30 years later, and I never conceived that DOA would be going for 5 years, let alone 30 years, right? So that's just a funny thing, the way it worked out. That song was actually kind of ended up being our little passport to travel the world, because it became like a, you know, an underground hit. So, and, you know, because it just said something about the times. I mean, disco was big at the time. And really, I got the idea. They were on TV. There was they had a disco record burning party at Comiskey Park in Chicago, where the White Sox play. And Dr. Demento, the DJ, was leading that. You know, there's on the pitcher's mound, there's thousands and thousands of records being burned in this bonfire, and he's yelling "Burn, baby, burn" the whole time over the PA system. And so the 7,000 people showed up for this, had such a good time, they decided to tear apart the park as well, right? So the Chicago police had to come in and subdue the rioters. And of course, this made like international news. And I saw this back in Vancouver. I was about like 18 or something like that. And I thought, and all these people had these shirts on, like "Death Before Disco," or they'd be wearing one that said "Disco Sucks." And I thought, that's a good idea for a song, right? So
yeah,
it just kind of worked out.
So you didn't start the actual saying, because I've seen the shirts as well, but you just thought...
No, I just saw them on TV, and people like, you know, a little bit older than me, like in their 20s and stuff like that, were like rock fans.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't, you know, what that's, you got to think, I mean, you know this as well as me, there wasn't like a lot of rock around the time. Like the big bands were like, I don't know, like... on a Canadian example, would be like Prism. I mean, that's not rock. Or Fleetwood Mac, that's not rock. And Boston, I mean, that's not rock either, right? You know, except in a perverse sense, you know?
Well, didn't they only put out two albums, Boston and then Boston's Greatest Hits?
Yeah, it was something like that. You regurgitated. It probably was two albums, then the Greatest Hits, right?
So,
they did have hits, right? But... anyway, so it was like that was a dull period, whereas you know, the counterculture of the '60s had obviously died off by that point, and there was some glimmer of hope because you had bands like the Dolls and Iggy Pop, but they had already fallen by the wayside by the time I came along. You know, they died off, you know, 75 or 76, you know. I mean, Iggy made a comeback, of course, right, which helped sort of spearhead the punk thing a little bit, right? But, you know, it was a very dull period in music, right?
Well, you answered part of my next question. We all know who you've influenced, the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Green Day, and the list goes on. But what was the scene in Vancouver in the late 70s? I mean, what could you get your hands on, and what were you listening to then?
You couldn't get your hands on a lot. I mean, I think that, I mean, we were listening to, Black Sabbath and, David Peel on the Lower East Side. You know, they were like a sort of marijuana advocate type band, and just sort of weird, odd stuff, and a little bit of Iggy Pop. And New York Dolls was a big thing with us, right? You know, when we were all about Wimpy, Dimwit and I, and Jerry Hanna, all about 16, 17. We didn't listen too long. Then one day, Dimwit came home with this Ramones record in about, I don't know, mid-77 or something like that. And we had been reading about it, and we put it on, and I thought, wow, that's really odd-sounding type thing. We weren't quite sure what to make of it, right? And because we were kind of playing rock and roll at the time. And then the Ramones came to town, and that held in a place that held 1,000 people, and they couldn't sell tickets, so they announced on the radio, come on down for a free show. So about maybe 100 of us showed up for these free tickets to see the Ramones, right? And they went on, played the entire first album, and that's, you know, they played for half an hour, and that's all the songs they had, and that was the end of the show type thing, right?
Yeah.
It was just an odd thing. So there wasn't a lot of inspiring stuff to listen to at that point, right?
Your life is sick. You don't talk to me about new paths. You're a political manager, shout your comments. What a lousy scam are you, but we vote down. I guess you got a right to just show ever.
Now, there's some oddball twists and turns in your career, of course. For listeners who don't know the story, in 1981, you read in a UK paper that you're opening for, I think, the Dead Kennedys in London. What happened there?
Well, we just flipped open. It was our usual thing to go down to a record store and look at the magazines because we couldn't afford them. So we, you know, because one of the things we do with the magazines was copy out addresses of people who might put on shows, and then we'd send them letters or if they had a phone, we'd phone them and try and set up tours like that, right? You know.
Yes,
and,
listeners, remember there was no internet.
Yeah, so it was just like, and we couldn't afford the magazines, so we'd just stand around the music store with a pad of paper and write down the numbers and all that, right? And so we flipped open Melody Maker, I think it was, and said, DOA, we'll play with the Dead Kennedys in the Anti-Nowhere League at the Lyceum in, I think, September 81, something like that. And we went, wow, that sounds great, except nobody told us that type thing, right?
Yeah.
So we phoned up the Dead Kennedys, who were, you know, who we were friends with at the time, and, you know, still are, but, and... you know, said, hey, can we get on the show? And they said, yeah, well, you know, we ain't gonna pay your way over, but if you can get over there, we'll do it, right? So we did, and the label Alternative Tentacles over in London put out an EP called Positively DOA, and it got like single of the week in a couple of the papers and sold really well, and that kind of really set us up in Europe over the next few years and like kind of widened out our appeal, I suppose, right? And we went over and played the show and three others, but the big show at the Lyceum, these English Hells Angels were going to beat us up, right, because we just thought they couldn't figure us out. We weren't Americans and we weren't Brits, right? We were just some sort of weird anomaly in between, right? And these guys wanted to have it out with us, which needless to say probably would have been pretty lopsided. And then Ray from the Dead Kennedys came down and interceded and went, wait, no, these guys are cool. Leave them alone type thing. And,
yeah.
You know, he saved the day. And it was just like, that was the times. It was like an unsettled time. And then there's still a lot of conflict. I mean, not that there's not conflict today, but there's different kinds. I mean, and you think about, you know, in 1980, Reagan got elected, and he was sort of like the trigger that really propelled punk rock ahead, so to speak, because he was such an asshole that people had to react, right? And that's when punk was really political. I mean,
yeah.
Elements of it today still are, but it's definitely the political elements are in the minority as
right.
far as punk rock goes. It's much more about fashion now than it used to be. It always had a sense of fashion, even in those days, obviously, but the politics were, and just raising hell were like a really huge part of it as well.
Now, a big DOA slogan is talk minus action equals zero.
Yeah.
And you certainly have put, you know, action, you know, where your words are, or you use your words as in songs or concerts or records to help causes. Right to Be Wild was to help an anarchist get a fair trial, and then there was a general strike, and Billy and the Socreds, which was a very conservative government, a provincial government at the time, and they had a lot of, I mean, that actually had some influence, and then The Only Thing Green was another one, right?
Yeah, sure, they would do these benefit singles or causes or concerts, that kind of thing, and the idea for the Talk Minus Action Equals Zero. It was on the cover of this anarchist magazine in Vancouver. The name of the magazine was Open Road, and this slogan was boldly put on the front. And we just sort of asked the group of the magazine, who we knew a bit, like, do you mind if we use this? And, you know, it's like, that's one of the principles of anarchism, I suppose, is you don't really take ownership, right? You know, you kind of share stuff in a sense, right?
Yeah.
So they were like, fine, and then... And once we started using that, then I guess it was up to us to try and do something to live up to that motto, you know? So I think, yeah, if you get out there, you can change a lot of things in the world, right? You know, big or small, right? And but I think that's part of the thing that one of the things today that you don't really get a lot with entertainers, you know, and I would call DOA just fit into being like entertainers, you know, mm-hmm. not just like rabble rousers, right? That they don't really use their power of celebrity too well. I mean, I think of a guy like Muhammad Ali. He stood up against the Vietnam War and made a big impact. Lost his world heavyweight title, went to jail for like 18 months, and got out and was more popular than ever, and became a symbol of Black America. You know, trying to assert some rights for themselves. You know, and there's a lot of musicians like Jimi Hendrix and Bob Dylan and a lot of the counterculture that may have stemmed where you know, when they saw bullshit, they called it that way. But if you think about today, it's hard to find people like that. One guy I think, you know, Canadians can be really proud of is Steve Nash.
Right.
And down in Dallas, perhaps one of the most conservative towns in America, playing for the Mavericks. And he's the only guy in the NBA who spoke out against the Iraq War, right?
Right.
You know, so, and that didn't stop him from winning the MVP or helping his team to the playoffs. Or,
that's right.
You know, playing great basketball, you know what I mean?
cigarettes, and I'm coming up to have it most of them.
I'm so much smarter than you.
Perry, that was London, Ontario's Antihero. That was live at IndyCan over a year ago. If you like that, you might want to check out www.indycan.com. Sorry if you're longtime listeners, you already know about this, but in our archives, you will find them under episode 8. And they actually play 4 songs live at IndyCan, and you'll get to meet the band a little bit. Before that was Mongoose from Vancouver, the song I Hate Cigarettes. Activism? I don't know. But before that, it was DOA, the song General Strike, the year 1988, and that is from their 26-track CD called Punk Rock Songs, 1978 to 1999 on Sudden Death Records. Now, going back to the set before, also on Sudden Death, was The Pointed Sticks. That was track 23, the live version of Middle Class. They sure like to give you your tracks worth. Mind you, a lot of them are at only about 2 minutes or less, but yeah, good punk music nevertheless. And we opened with Bukkake Catholic. That is Bukkake Catholic, Catholic. If you don't know what Bukkake means, 2 words, students, Wikipedia. Anyway, look up that band. They are a Toronto punk band. I love them. Later on, I think we'll have time. I'm sure we'll have time. I'm going to share an interview I had with you with the London, UK punk band, or post-punk band, the Buck Brothers. They broke a world record, and they're going to tell us about it. They credit some of that to their experience in Canada, and, well, you'll see what I mean later. Anyway, let's get back to the interview with Joey Keithley. Music today, of course, there are all this sort of cross-breeding of genres. We have post-punk, punkabilly, pop punk, which to me is an oxymoron. I mentioned to you, I think, do you have a magazine out there called Nerve? Is that the name of it?
Yeah, it's one of the local, well, it's distributed outside of Vancouver, but it originates here in Vancouver, yeah.
Yeah. Well, a punk artist with a band called Cobweb Society, the singer Carly Meow, was quoted as saying there was some reference to pop punk and Avril Lavigne, and she just blurted out and said, Avril Lavigne's a country singer who sings candy-ass songs.
Yeah, I describe her more as like a pop slash pop rock. I don't see that much country in her music from the stuff I've heard, right, but you know what I mean? Like, it's definitely not punk, and I think a good example, like I saw this film a couple years ago, was like, it was crazy. It was a Shania Twain doing You Shook Me All Night Long by AC/DC.
Right.
And the commentator is going like, oh, yeah, that's what a kick-ass version. And she was wearing a Ramones shirt at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's enough to make you reach for the barf bag, right? It's just like, this person knows absolutely nothing about this, right? Or maybe they do, but they certainly have that. It's not been evident earlier in their career, as far as I know, right? So, and, you know, Avril Lavigne might be a fan of punk and might have gone to punk shows and stuff like that, but what she does now, it has nothing to do with it. But she's promoted that way, you know, because she'll go on wear a shirt with a skinny tie, a la, like, the kind of, you know,
the '80s look.
Type, yeah, early '80s, exactly. Right, you know, the like, a lot of the new wave or slash punk guys would wear stuff like that, or girls would too, right? You know,
yeah.
You know, the loose tie type thing with the shirt and no coat, right? So, I wouldn't describe it as punk, that's for sure.
So, as the godfather of Canadian punk, you are entitled to your say.
That's the only thing I got going for me, Joe.
Yeah, well, I hope not, but it is noteworthy. But can these genres coexist? Punk was completely counterculture, so it never wanted to be pop music. But can it be in this day and age? Have we gotten to a place where, there's room for that?
Well, I think it's kind of it's gotten so washed out in a sense. Like I say, there are good bands out there. Like some of the old bands are doing well, coming up with stuff like, you know, Bad Religion and stuff like that. They still come up with timely material and are traveling around and, you know, people are making people think and stuff like that. But I think that there's a fine line here, right? Because this is my definition of punk. If it's got no content, and it's got no heart, and it doesn't say anything, and it, punk was meant to be anti-establishment and shake things up.
Right.
But the only thing you're doing is like looking like a punk and turning and making your guitars really distorted during the chorus or parts of the verse. Just because you turn your guitars up doesn't stop you from being a pop group.
Right.
You know, these are like pop groups dressed up as punk rock bands because punk rock is a perfect way to sell subversion to kids so they can. It's a perfect way to tell your parents, the cops, your teachers, and your boss to fuck off, right? it's just like, it's a funny thing. The funny thing is there, Joe, is just I'm amazed how long it took marketing companies and record companies to catch on to that, because it was tailor-made for it in the first place, right?
Yeah.
You know, and they just were there like 15, 20 years too slow, right? So, you know, so like, yeah, it's, I don't know what you do. It's become a genre of music. So, in a lot of sense, yeah. Before it was, if you were a punk, people either wanted to beat you up or they wanted to run away because they were afraid, right? That you just, you landed from Mars or something like that, right? You know.
Yeah. And skinheads, like, the first Mohawks.
Yeah, the rednecks would yell out of their trucks and they'd want to fight with you. And unless there's more than one of you, then they want to just throw beer balls at you type thing.
I need your love, wanna ride.
Hey, everybody, it's Joe Shithead from DOA. How you doing? You're listening to IndieCan Radio.
Let's go to the new music project, which is Band of Rebels.
Yeah.
You were quoted as saying that you needed to stretch out and try new things.
Mm.
And what was so restrictive about DOA that you couldn't try new things? What did you mean by that?
Well, not really in a sense. I mean, DOA, we've always tried offbeat things. We've tried a few reggae songs, and War, the song War is a good example, like a revved up version of a funk track, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, DOA has always had a bit of a hand in rock and roll. It's always kind of influenced us a little bit.
Yeah.
More so than a lot of punk bands, right? You know, I think because that's just what Randy and I and Chuck grew up on in the early 70s and stuff like that, the mid-70s. But I thought with, usually when I would write a song, and then, of course, inevitably when I write a song, it would turn into a DOA song, you know, 95% of the time.
Yeah.
Then, you know, we give it a pretty revved up, tough treatment with a lot of heavy-handed guitars. I mean, because to me, that's what, if you put on a DOA record, that's what you would expect, type thing, right? It's the style, right? So I thought with Band of Rebels that we do it with a drum set and make it lively, but we'd add in different instrumentation. So there's a fair bit of guitar on it, but we also add like a piano and organ,
violin,
and a bunch of different percussion and stuff like that, and sax and trumpets, right? So to me, it kind of opens up some more kind of angles and stuff like that. So you can look at these songs with kind of a different ear.
Yeah.
You know, so some of them you could say, oh, yeah, that would almost be a DOA song. And then some of them be like, oh, that's definitely not a DOA song, right?
Yeah.
So usually I would have to take songs before a DOA album, whatever I wrote, and then sort of bend it and shape it into a DOA song, right?
Yeah.
You know, which, I mean, you can take any style and turn it into something, really, you know, if you're, you know, think about it for a little bit, right, you know?
Yeah, so people who are looking for the hidden meaning about artistic differences, I mean, many of the people who have come in and out of the doors under the banner DOA are on this record, right?
Yeah. Well, it's, Randy's playing on it, based on one track and singing on a bunch of others, and the great Baldini,
who
drummed on the last two DOA albums and been with us for the last 8 years.
Yeah,
he's drumming, and then the horn section, they actually played on the last DOA record on a couple of like ska type tracks, right? So it had them in there, and the keyboard player was in there too. Chris Kestrin was on. So it's just like friends of mine, and I just tried to get what I thought were the funnest people to work with in combo with who I thought were the best people.
Yeah,
who could really, you know, the guys we got playing some of the instruments are just like, wow, they're fucking great, right? So.
Well,
you know, but same time, you know, I produced a record, and I go like, okay, we don't want to overdo it. This has got to fit as a whole, like, you know, and sound like a record, not like just something over the top or overly extravagant, right? So,
yeah,
you know, so this, and I thought the Band of Rebels, that's kind of like my collective name. So I'll probably do a bunch of albums like under the kind of under that title, and it won't necessarily sound like that, but it's like the Band of Rebels being like kind of this musical collective, so to speak. So.
Okay, I'm going to finish up with five rapid-fire questions.
First thing
that comes to your mind.
Yeah.
Number one is guilty pleasures. Some TV show or type of music you listen to that you think, ooh, people might think this is bad for my reputation.
Oh, God, that happens all the time. I kind of thinking the one thing that was really bad is what's the Tom Selleck show where it's
Magnum PI.
We used to use that as an opening theme song for DOA as we came on stage, and we even got to the point, I think I had a mustache or something like that, and we were all wearing Hawaiian shirts. It was a really bad period in DOA, but there we go. A TV show like that, yeah.
Okay, your favorite restaurant on the road. So one you always look forward to going back to.
Oh, Christ. There's, what's the best one? There's the Kiev in New York. That's right in the village there.
Mm-hmm.
And, Christ, I said there's a bunch of them there. I really got to try to think. Well, the best one used to be Flint's Barbecue in Oakland, California.
Yeah.
Yeah, Flint's Barbecue, 555 Shattuck Avenue. We got the ribs for you. That's kind of their slogan, right? So, yeah, that, but it's closed, right? It was great, though, right? Unbelievable.
Now, what would be your dream concert to go to as a fan with four bands on the lineup?
Well, I think one of the things I said recently was that that people were fawning over how the general public, I mean, were fawning over how great this Police reunion was. But I went, you know what? The band that had the most impact out of that time would be The Clash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that they actually had something to say besides do 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 and da da da. That's all I want to say to you, which to me sums up the Police pretty well, right?
Yeah.
So it'd be those guys with all the guys alive. Ramones with all those guys alive. The original Black Sabbath.
Wow.
I just love those guys. They're great. And Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Okay, cool.
Which is probably my all-time favorite band.
Heck of a show. You did not a parody so much, but you did a John Fogerty tune.
Yeah.
You took Standing on the Corner and made it your own, didn't you?
Yeah, Billy and the Socreds. That was the one, yeah.
Yeah.
We've covered a couple other Creedence songs, right? So that guy's an incredible songwriter, great singer.
Yeah. What did you want to be when you grew up, when you were 10 years old?
13 and 14, I wanted to be a professional hockey player, and which is not unusual for Canada.
Yeah.
But I modeled myself more after Ted Green than Bobby Orr. I was a Bruins fan, right? So
yeah.
I was more the stick-swinging type guy rather than the goal-scoring guy. And when I was like, when I was 17, I thought I was going to be a civil rights lawyer. So I actually went to school to become a lawyer, right? So.
Fabulous. And number five is your favorite hockey memory.
God, it was never quite consummated because the Canucks lost the Cup in 94 to the Rangers, so that was really bad.
I remember it. I was in Vancouver at the time.
And yeah,
I was absolutely flabbergasted at how well Vancouver treated the Canucks. I mean, they treated them like champions anyway.
Yeah, it was pretty good. My favorite hockey memory would be with the first we formed a DOA team. It was called the DOA Murder Squad. And so our idea was to take on philosophical rivals. So we played this radio station in Vancouver called CFOX that would never play DOA. So it was our goal to go out there and crush them.
And you were the Hansen brothers, right?
Johnny didn't play on the team at that point, right? But to be on the DOA team, you had to be in the music business or be a musician, right?
There was a
drummer from 5440 and a few other friends of mine. And anyway, so CFOX hired as their coach the master strategist, Bruce Allen, who manages Brian Adams and stacks of other people. But he went on the air before the game on the radio station and says, that DOA's got no talent. They're washed up bums, and they can't play hockey either, and we're going to crush them come Thursday night at Britannia Rink. And you know what? We crushed them. And so my favorite hockey memory was after the game, I happened to run into Bruce in the foyer, and the look on his face was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my fucking life, right? Because we had crushed these guys, right? And not just beat them, but we had, like, smashed them and hacked them and beat them by a bunch of goals, too, right? So, yeah.
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 Well, thanks for the little...
Yeah, thanks, sir, Joe. That was fun.
Yeah, trip down memory
lane. Let's all go to the restaurant. What do you want? What do you want? Let's all go to the restaurant. What do you want? What do you want? Is this just how we are communicating? Or is this just how it was always meant to be? I don't got many tricks on me. Oh, no! So why do we go to Mexico? What do you want? What do you want?
I like girls in skirts and boots on bikes. Girls in skirts and boots on bikes. I like the bikes with the girls in the skirts and the boots, and the boots with the girls riding over to you. Bits of thigh, lovely.
Here we are at the Drake, the very end of the Buck Brothers Canadian Tour with Andy. Hey-ha. Buck.
Hello.
And one of the Buck Brothers' number one Canadian fans, Red.
Thank you.
Say hello to IndieCan listeners.
Oh, IndieCan listeners, I love you.
I love you all. Thank you for listening.
What drew you into the Buck Brothers?
The attraction was the nice people and it's post-punk. They have such high fucking energy. It's amazing.
Great live show, wouldn't you say?
Honestly, there's so many shows that I've seen within a week. I see about five. And this show drew me within North by Northeast. They were good personality, good music, and good energy. You can't beat it.
Absolutely. And we pay her a lot of money to say that.
It's true.
Oh, any number of people would have said it. Both of the fans tonight would have easily said the same thing.
The two fans and the mother. Thank goodness for hanging out.
And her mother pay her to get done here, and then we pay her an equal measure back.
So. And so how was Canada to you? How did it
Canada be fucking
Canada.
Brilliant.
is that how you think we say it, Mr. Chisholm?
Yes.
No, we don't.
That's how they say it on Coronation Street. Canada. Okay, but bad accents aside, how was this trip?
I think it's been pretty good. We've been here three times now, and we've been here, the fourth time before that. It's been gradually better each time. So we have more control of the shows and more control of the amount of people coming down and all the rest of it. But it's been gradually a lot better.
I'm quite certain you have played more shows in Canada in the last 12 months than some of the Toronto indie bands here.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, that's how pushy we are. We just push on and we know sort of what we're trying to do and achieve. So I think out of the kind of North by Northeast and Canadian music, I think we get more out of it than even the most local band who lives next door, because we not only know what we have to do, but actually we're pushing on and try to do as much as we can.
Now, on your website, there's a little bit of press. You were attempting a record. Let's talk about that. What was that?
It was we attempted to break the record for the most number of gigs performed in a 12-hour period. The record when we decided to go for it was 26, held by a German band called Kansas City, and we thought, you know, the Germans cannot hold this for much longer, so we thought we'd break it, and we did. And on the 5th of March, 2007.
It's not the break. It's
we performed 28 gigs in 10 and a half hours.
And according to the video, you were off to a bit of a slow start. There were some equipment problems, some transportation problems.
Absolutely. You know, it's like in the face of adversity, Buck Brothers reign supreme. Give us your challenges. Give us your nastiness. We'll deal with it. The one thing about coming to Canada is, you know, we can deal with chill. We can deal with things going awry. And we can handle it with a Canadian smile, and we dealt with all of it. It's thanks to Canada that we were able to deal with all of the shit that we had to, you know. Come on, let's pick it up.
All about the Canadian steel.
It's Canadian steel. We had the reason why we beat the world record for most number of gigs was we had Canadian steel.
Canadian steel.
Absolutely. Canada has been very receptive to us, anyways. It's been very good. The record was amazing. I mean, it was a complete team effort. It wasn't just the three of us doing it. It was kind of a team of 10, 12 people, and we're leapfrogging it with two different bands.
It was pretty emotional stuff, and we did it.
Of course we did it.
Absolutely. Westy, we did it together, didn't we?
We did it together.
Yes.
Up the CN Tower, scared of the glass floor. Oh. We did it together.
Oh, did you try that?
Yeah, we did.
It's
that.
A long way down, eh?
Oh my god, I was scared beyond belief. I tell you what, the whole world record thing, fuck it.
Yeah.
Nothing could compare to how I felt doing the leap of faith, going over.
There were small children doing, what is it?
Backflips.
Backflips over the glass floor, and Andy wouldn't touch it.
That's true.
You never did stand on it?
No, he did.
No, I did. Fine. I did the leap of faith.
Good for you.
And to be honest, that particular feat was much more important than the whole world record attempt. fuck doing 28 gigs in 10 and a half hours.
Fabulous. Well, we're glad to have you. We were actually going to honor you with the key to the city, but Toronto is now keyless entry.
Really?
Yeah. So
where's the fob key then, Joe?
You need the all you need is the code 321. You're in.
321. Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Well, there you go.
Listen, right, okay.
Now, for fans that want to own the CD of the world record holders.
Yes.
How do they get a hold of?
Well,
the
easily www.buckbrothers.net or myspace/buckbrothers. Simple
and
as
they'll find or it there.
Or even promotion company over here diverta.com/buckbrothers.
Fabulous. Well,
they can buy everything.
Yeah, listeners, get out there and support your indie artists. They love you and they need you.
Absolutely.
IndieCan, we love you. We love Canada. And thanks very much for making us feel very much a part of your family.
You are a part of our family.
You are absolutely right.
Don't lie.
What's your favorite Buck Brothers song? Because we're going to play a tune now.
She's fucking red.
Of course.
Oh, fucking
roll so much.
Her mood has a color, maroon of the darkest hue. Her hair pulled back, twisted in plaits, is decidedly crimson too. Aroma of cinnamon and ginger seasoned cakes. She's like a Testarossa, Top Gear, riding with no brakes. She's red, not just the color of her hair. She's red, red, not just the books next to her bed. She really is well red, red, red. Her season is autumnal. She's the fourth planet from the sun. Her hot-blooded ways are easily enraged. She won't finish till she's won. Lipstick of capsicum.
solutions, put me at the front of the line. Let me know I'm not dreaming, I don't wanna miss it this time. Wake me up for the revolution, put me at the front of the line. Let me know I'm not dreaming, I'll make sure I'm there on time. Come on, get up for the revolution, do your bit, no time to whine. I'll come and get you at the pop, we don't wanna miss it this time. One stormy day I fell to dreaming, I'm quite calm, I was feeling. I didn't sense fear, I didn't sense hate, somehow peace didn't have to wait. A revolution,
revolution
shook the land,
shook the land.
I wish was there, I'm ready to make a stand. Wake me up for the revolution, put me at the front of the line. Let me know I'm not dreaming, I'll make sure I'm there in time. Come on, get up for the revolution, do your bit, no time to whine. Come and get you at the pub, we don't wanna miss it this time. But dreams don't last even when you're sleeping. I don't chill in the air, killers start creeping. The men in charge don't care what is just, and dreams of freedom turn to rust. A revolution,
revolution
shook the land,
shook the land.
I wish was there, I'm ready to make a stand. Well, wake me up for the revolution, put me at the front of the line. Let me know I'm not dreaming, I'll make sure I'm there on time. Come on, get up for the revolution, do your bit, no time to whine. I come and get you at the pub, we don't wanna miss it this time. One stormy day I fell to dreaming, my quiet calm I was feeling. Fear I didn't sense hate, somehow peace didn't have to wait.
We're listening to Joey Keithley and the Band of Rebels. You heard the Buck Brothers. How do you like that Joey interview? That's only about half of it. If you go to School of Rock, that's a section on www.indycan.com. You can find the whole interview there with a number of other interesting people. The song General Strike we heard was 1983, not 1988, my bad. We also broke away from the interview for Nickels and Dimes, a song by Cobweb Society. 30 years of punk. Who would have ever thought it would last so long?
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Indie Scene, an IndieCan music production.
For more information on the artists featured on today's show, visit IndieCan.com.